Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery, code Wondery.
Life is full of personal wins, whether it's cleaning your house, getting that dream car, or checking off your to-do list. Winning at life is a great feeling. And with the State Farm Personal Price Plan, you can keep winning when you create an affordable price just for you by bundling home and auto. So give yourself a round of applause. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with a personal price plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast at Large, episode number 683. Katie, I have a question for you, and I want you to be honest with me.
Yes.
What is on the community corkboard? What is on the Nerdist community corkboard that anyone can email their event to at events@nerdist.com?
Well, one of our listeners, who didn't give a name, but they design and sell these really cool 3D printed toy space adventurers with cool jetpacks, and they sell them on Etsy, and they're really cute. And you can find them at etsy.com/shop/clumsyblasters.
Fantastic.
Also, this past week on You Made It Weird, Pete interviewed Noel Gallagher.
What?
Mm-hmm.
How did that go?
Great. It was a shorter one, but it was really good. So everyone should listen to it. It's out now.
That's fantastic. Yeah. This is from listener Donnie Plumley. Hey there, big fan of the show. Was listening to the Josh McDermott podcast, heard about the community corkboard. I am part of a team making a device to help people that suffer from non-communicative disorders such as autism, brain injury, stroke. We just launched our Indiegogo and are trying to get people to donate to the cause. We want to reach 20,000 to make 100 of these devices and give them away to families in need for free.
That
Katie
would be
Levine.
Great.
The link to their Indiegogo and Dustin's Words sites are below, and it's dustinswords.com or dustinswords.com/Indiegogo. Thank you very much for doing that, Donnie. You're a good human being, and hopefully we can generate some money for you to do that and give these devices to people.
Yeah.
This episode is Alicia Witt, who was on last year and came back. This episode, we went to SIR Studios in Hollywood, who are now kind of our one of our music partners. SIR and Swing House are the two places that we go now, and SIR, they've set us up in this nice studio.
That studio was so cool.
It was really cool. There was like a lighting rig. It was really rad.
Old school.
And Alicia Witt came in, who not only is an amazing actress and incredibly intelligent and incredibly articulate, and also insanely musically talented, and she has an album out now called Revisionary History, and you can get it where you buy your music. And so we did kind of a storyteller's episode where she sat down and she was kind of, you know, just fiddling a little bit to make sure the keyboard was set up right. I was like, do you want to just do a storyteller's episode? And she said, sure. And it was really, really fun, and it was very enjoyable to have her ultimately spray all of her talent all over the ears of our listeners. That sounded bad the way it came out, but I didn't
but
mean it that
good.
Way. You'll understand
when you
hear it. So here's Nerdist Podcast number 683 with the wonderful Alicia Witt.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
We're going to do a little private show here.
A little private show especially for you. Yeah.
Here in the Disco Suite at SIR Recording Studios.
I love it.
Fuck yeah.
This is fine for me.
isn't it funny? I was so right about you all along. That's fine for me. Isn't it funny? I was so right about you all along. Yeah. Now for me, the piano is much louder than the vocal, but that's, I don't mind. Whatever's best for you guys. Said, it's all been done, it's all been wasted on the ones who came before and fade to gray. They all look more or less the same, and here you are, they're swept away. You make it hard for me to say a simple line.
I'm telling you, this disco room that we're in with this lighting rig and I wish you could hear the color and fabric of the walls of this room. Because you know what this really needs is, I feel like we could shoot the commercial for your greatest hits album from the 80s in here. Sessions presents Alicia Witt's greatest hit. Because like the lighting rig is perfect. Oh, and yeah. You would just get... If we just got snippets of each songs and just different camera dissolves, like it's
definitely,
this is perfect.
That'd be awesome.
I know. Can we get the lighting rig working? Can we get a full camera crew in here? Can we get the 80s back? You can't bring the 80s back. So how do you want to do this? Do you want to chat first and then do songs, or do you want to do songs first and then chat? Because we'll tack the songs on at the end. But or do you want to do like a storyteller's thing where we talk and you play a song and you talk and you play a song? That's kind of a fun thing too. You know the very first person that we ever did this with, where we went into a studio and they played songs?
No.
Ben Folds.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I thought you might say that.
Yeah, it was a few years ago, and I was like, oh my God, why don't we just go into a recording studio?
Yeah.
And he did it, and what I was really worried is that he was going to realize that we just tricked him into giving us a private concert. I think he figured that out halfway through, but he was very gracious about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it all worked out okay.
That would have been a great thing. So.
But we now have tricked you into giving us a private concert.
Fantastic.
As well. I think storytelling. I don't think we've done like a real storytellers podcast. So I'm gonna move my chair closer to the edge of the piano.
Do you want me to still just play two songs all the way through?
You can do whatever you want. This is your time.
Ooh.
You could do. You could just improvise songs, or you could write old songs. You could do a Carpenter song, but you could do anything you want.
Okay.
If you were gonna do a Carpenter song, which one would it be?
I mean, the one that comes to my head is "We've Only Just Begun," but I don't know how to play it.
You don't know how to play it. One time.
Yeah, we want that.
And then the jams kick in. You are not messing around. You know how to play the piano. I always wanted that skill.
Well, you know, I did play piano at the Beverly Wilshire Hotel to support myself. So... I know a lot of those songs, you know, that get requested when you're doing background dinner music.
Oh, my God.
So, like, you know.
I just think that's the best mutant
classical
power to
stuff.
Have when someone... When
you see. It's good background dinner music. I used to be able to talk while I played...
I'm trying to do it right now. Do you guys have... What's the fish tonight?
Harold, what did they say?
I can't hear. I can't hear. There's a rock musician playing.
Would you tell that piano player to shut up, please?
Excuse me, my wife is trying to order fish. Do you know what the fish is?
I'm sorry, sir, I don't know what the fish is.
She doesn't know what the fish is.
And then I can play. So, I mean, all this stuff, I honestly haven't played this in years. And
oh, this was my college song.
And I can
song.
Still talk while I play. Well, I'm losing the rhythm a little bit. But it was the way I got tips sometimes, is to have a conversation while people came up to me. And I wasn't allowed to put a tip jar in the piano. Now I'm starting to lose the rhythm a little bit while I talk. But the funny thing was, you weren't allowed to have a tip jar in the piano because... The management told me they wanted people to feel like they were in somebody's home.
Sure.
And that you wouldn't have a tip jar in somebody's home. So we couldn't do it at the Beverly Wilshire either.
I'm telling you, if you just sit down and start playing The Entertainer, then you deserve a tip jar in your home. Like, I don't know what else to – he's wrong. Your manager was wrong. But I always wanted that skill set where you would go, oh, I don't know if I remember how to – because you're like, I don't know if I know how to play this. And then you just crank it out. Like your brain and your hands just know – what the language of the songs are, because you know that, you know, most songs have a structure and you can figure out where they go from there.
Yeah.
I'm so jealous of that. What was your favorite? Was there anything? What was edgy for the Beverly Wilshire Hotel?
Edgy was, there was one host there who would make requests of songs that were on the radio at the time. So this was in the mid-90s, so, or like early to mid-90s. So, oh, I don't know if I can remember how to play it, but things like Elton John songs and that sort of
right.
thing, they were still pretty easygoing. But I remember he loved The One, which was on the radio around that time.
Yes.
And things like that were on the radio currently were considered a little bit more out of left field because it was mostly classics, like
right
as time goes by.
I feel like I'm at Nordstrom's.
I know, that's what I'm talking about. But I used to sometimes throw in a few of my own that were just instrumental things, and then nobody would know what they were. So that was cool. I wasn't singing there because it was background.
Okay.
And the weird thing also was that there was a constant battle between, you were joking earlier about the guy saying, my wife can't hear herself order because you're too loud. I would have days when it was a constant thing going back and forth where one person would come up and ask me to play more quietly because they were having a meeting. And then somebody else would come up and say, you're playing so beautifully. Why don't you play more loudly so we can all hear you? I'm in the back of the room.
See, they got to move the meetings to the back of the room.
I know.
And then the lesson here is that you can't make everyone happy at all.
Yeah, it's true. There was one guy who came in and he kept giving me $100 bills to play Elvis songs one afternoon. Of course, I was delighted, so I kept playing Elvis songs.
Did you play them in the doo 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 doo? Did you play them in that rock and roll piano
probably.
Style?
Probably. I'm trying to remember if I can if I know. I don't think I remember any of them right this moment.
Would
I'm sure
Benjamin Franklin
Dog.
For a fresher memory?
You ain't nothing but a hound dog. I can certainly sing it. I think I did, though. Like...
So many of them just did that.
They did, pretty much over and over again.
At what point do you think music really started to branch off and become a lot of different things? Because it seemed like there was a period of time where everyone – there was one well for that type of music and everyone just kind of dipped into that well. There were standards and people just played everyone else's music and it wasn't – at what point did the real like – was it the 60s or the 70s with the real singer-songwriter kind of branching off, do you think?
Oh, I think the Beatles had a huge lot to do with all of that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. When I was younger, I didn't honestly appreciate what a huge contribution the Beatles made to music in general.
Yeah.
But I think that was, I mean, there were many bridges, but I think if there were just one, they were kind of the bridge between that sort of rock and roll, like Bobby Sox dancing kind of vibe, and the singer-songwriter and the more complicated soaring melodies and chord progressions that were unusual. I think they were the gateway to the Rolling Stones and bands like that.
Yeah. Were there any Beatles songs in your hotel repertoire?
They were more of the earlier songs that I would get requested, like I Want to Hold Your Hand, and those that were more in the rock and roll,
right?
You know, 50s.
And were those allowed at the hotel, or was that?
Those were allowed, but you had to play them quietly, for sure. I mean, stuff like Rolling Stones and that sort of thing wasn't even part of it. Not at all. There was some Neil Diamond.
Oh, of course there was.
What's that one?
Oh, hello. Oh, yeah, I know this one. Just called to see. Hello. My mom loved this song. I couldn't sleep at all tonight, but I know it's late. And I can't masturbate. See, I gotta always make it dumb. I gotta make it dumb. Hello. Yeah, my mom fucking loved Neil Diamond, that album that Barbara Streisand did with Barry Gibb when they were dating. Like, she loved the most.
Oh, I Am a Woman in Love.
All of that stuff, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Loved. She was like, she was just right down the middle of contemporary adult soft rock. Like, that was my mom's wheelhouse.
Yeah, my mom too, I think. I mean, she really liked Barry Manilow.
Oh, yeah.
I do too, honestly.
Well, he wrote a lot of good songs.
He writes the songs, doesn't
that
he?
That make the whole world, yeah. That make the mom sing. I know the song so well. Now that was even a little borderline edgy for like you.
I love that. I think Barry Manilow is one of the most underappreciated songwriters that we've had.
I think, I mean, at the time people knew, because he wrote a bunch of stuff for other people too.
He did. Dionne Warwick, for one, he wrote a lot of her songs.
But I think it's just lately. I mean, does he still perform?
As far as I know, he does.
He does still
perform.
He
plays huge shows in Vegas and tours all over the place, and he still sounds good. But those are some great songs. I find myself remembering them and going back and listening to them and... there's just one song he has all the time.
I don't know if I know that one.
Oh, let me see if I can remember it. All the time I thought. That's the wrong chord. All the time I thought. There's only me. Would have given everything I own if someone would have said you're not alone.
Okay, that part sounds familiar.
I love this song. It just breaks my heart.
Yeah, he was a masterful at the chord change that would like whip around and punch you in the chest.
Yeah, it's
like,
That's the one.
Manilow! Yeah. No. Yep.
Ugh.
Yep.
It does. It punches you right in the chest.
Right in the chest. He was, it's funny that he, writing a song about writing a song is so strange now.
Yeah. It is. I write the songs that make the whole world sing.
I'm singing about the thing I'm doing right now.
Exactly.
Like, that's so strange. I'm going to sing about it some more. I'm singing about the thing. It's so...
And you're going to sing this song as soon as it's over.
You're going to sing about the song. I'm singing about the song. Like, it's so...
That I'm writing right
now. That I'm writing
yes.
right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was that time in music where I was like, fuck it, yeah, no. This type of music, no one's doing this yet. So write about the process of writing this song. When you can't, like, I don't really know what I want to write about. I'm sick of writing about love. I'm sick of writing about broken hearts. I wonder if they were temporary lyrics where he found this melody. He was like, I'm writing the songs. And then eventually he was like, well, I couldn't come up with anything else. So let's just lay that down.
Well, that one, though, I mean, if you look at the lyrics, he's actually writing about he is music. He says at the end, I am music.
That's a bold statement.
And I write the songs.
That's a bold statement.
But I think he's trying to take the character of music. Like, he's not writing it as Barry. He's writing it as... He says, I've been alive forever, and I wrote the very first songs. He's not saying he's done that personally.
Oh, so he is the character of music
yes.
in that song. Oh.
You can see I've spent some time thinking about Barry Manilow.
So wait, but then I don't understand. So music is writing itself? Is
yeah.
that what it is? Music is writing itself through history?
I put the words and the melodies together. I am music, and I write the songs.
Are you sure he wasn't singing about Kanye?
That would be weird because I don't think Kanye was born yet.
Well, but that's how eternal Kanye is that he's,
yeah,
at least in his mind.
Well, yeah, it's just a divine.
That's amazing. I never thought that he was writing from the point of view of music. Oh, that blows my fucking mind. That blows my mind.
Well, as opposed to the song Mandy, which there's an urban myth that it was about his dog, but I've heard that that's not true.
Really?
Yeah.
Was it just a made-up thing?
Apparently so.
Oh. Well, that's a fun thing about music is that people will just assign whatever. You know, you could honestly just sing a song all about the color blue. And people would be like, well, that's because when Alicia was a little girl, she had this blue teddy bear. Like, people would figure out something, their own thing to project onto it. But I guess that's the beauty of music, right? And being
yeah.
being a songwriter is that you get to throw a thing out in the world and then people will just go and then just translate it however they want.
Oh, completely. I mean, I've been reminded of this song I wrote called Taken, which is not on the new album. This is from a few years ago. And there's a couple who actually used it as their first dance at their wedding in Chicago. And It was definitely written as a love song, but there's a whole section towards the very end of it where the truth was I was realizing that I was feeling that I was taken, that I was no longer single, in regards to this guy who was not in the country, and we had sort of fallen in love long distance.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's this whole bit towards the end which is specifically about sitting down to write this song and the video chat fading. and I just, it made me think of that because I thought, yeah, this was part of their love song, but it's, to me, it's very specifically about that. And to them, I guess it's not. Your face, the way I left you, is burned into my screen. I stare until the lights go out. I can almost hear you breathe. The room has turned to darkness. I try and start this song and sit here in another plane while the night out. Outside goes on.
Listen, Alicia, I've been talking to the customers. That's too contemporary of a theme. You said screen. They don't know what that is.
No.
They don't understand what computers are.
they wouldn't.
I love that you were sneaking your own songs into the... I mean, I guess you would... I can't imagine people would have to do that all the time, right? Like, you'd go crazy, right, if you just had to play other people's songs day in, day out, the same ones every day, every shift. You would have to fuck around a little bit, right?
Yeah, I certainly loved sneaking in a few of my own, and I also loved playing the modern stuff.
Yeah.
Because then I was thinking about what I was listening to on the radio, and I'd go home in between auditions and all of that and work out some new songs. I had what were known as fake books, you know? The big fat ones that have like 2,000 songs in them.
Yeah.
And it just has the lyrics and the chords and the strips of melody.
Right.
So with those in hand, if somebody came up to me with a request for something I didn't know how to play, it had all my chords.
Right.
So I could just fake it.
You could play along just with the... With like, it's like the guitar chord notation where
exactly.
It says like E7, blah,
exactly.
Blah, blah. Yeah, yeah. But, and most of those songs, because they were probably mostly pop songs, you knew like, oh, it's going to end on the fifth because it started here. And so then at a certain point, you just kind of get it, right?
Yeah.
God, I want to learn how to do that. Teach me something.
Well, I want to learn how to play the guitar, so... You don't play the guitar, do you?
Not well. I could teach you how to play shitty guitar.
Oh, I can teach you how to play shitty piano because I'm probably a shitty teacher.
Just play this.
Yeah.
Just do this. Yeah. No, I think if you play one instrument and then you pick up another, there's that learning curve. But then at a certain point, your brain kind of kicks into the, oh, this is just this, but done this way. And then once you see like what the translation formula is, I think you'd pick it up like that because you understand music theory and that's basically what you need to understand.
Yeah.
And your fingers are very nimble.
Yeah. I've taken a few guitar lessons and I'm out of practice the last few months, but yeah, I think there definitely is that point when it starts to make sense. And the same thing is true on guitar as it would be on piano. Like if you already know how to play a little bit of guitar, just start picking out some songs that you love on the piano and then you'll start seeing what the chords are.
You know, the one to conquer, I think, is especially if you're going to play in a hotel or a department store, harp.
Oh.
Yeah.
I knew a harpist once. She was also a great masseuse.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Which is sort of
makes perfect sense.
And she was slight, too. You'd look at her coming in to give you a massage, and you'd think, oh, this is going to be a crappy massage because she's so little.
I sure hope she's a harpist. Because if not, this is going to go horribly.
Yeah, exactly.
Harp looks like – it's a very elegant-looking thing, but it looks to me like one of the most difficult instruments because it's this large, lumbering thing that you have to lean on your body and then reach around, and it's all plucking really hard.
Yeah, it looks unwieldy.
Yeah.
And I would imagine harpists develop very strong, not only fingers, but also just arm muscles. It's like a permanent sidearm yoga pose. Like you've got your shoulders outstretched in front of you. That's got to be a lot on you.
Yeah, I know. It looks like a harp looks like a weapon. It looks like an alien weapon. I think it's so interesting to. I'm always interested when people are like, "Yeah, I always just wanted to play the bassoon." Like how people pick the offbeat instruments, because you really have to. There are some instruments where you can be a solo piano player, you can be a solo guitarist, but there are other instruments where you're like, "No, I just like being part of an ensemble." There's not really you're not really a solo bassoonist.
No.
That you go out into the world and take your solo bassoon.
No, and if anything, learning those instruments, going to conservatory for that, I think you have more of a shot at having a professional gig because there's probably not that many people studying that instrument in your part of the world. But also, you can always join an orchestra and be one of the bassoonists or that sort of thing. The opportunity to get to do that thing that you love, playing that instrument for a living, is, I think, a bit easier than if you're a classically trained piano player.
Yeah.
Because there's only a few solo piano artists who get to tour the world with orchestras, but there's never an orchestra piano player.
And no one ever says, do you guys want to go to that new bassoon bar? Like, there's no where they just put a bassoon and a contra bassoon in a room and they just fight. They just duel. They duel for dominance. And then the only one person emerges alive.
But the thing is, piano players don't want to be playing background music.
No.
I mean, I know, and I knew at the time how fortunate it was that I had a job where I got to do that and make a living while I was trying to be an actor. Because at the time, I wasn't even really thinking about doing my music and playing gigs like I am now. Yep. This is a dream. This is fantastic. But when you study classical music, especially if you go even further with it than I did, because I was competing and all of that as a kid, but when I was 14, I knew I did not want to do that for a living, so I stopped. But many people at that stage then go on and they start applying to Juilliard and all the conservatories around the country and the world. And then they spend another 8 years focusing on it and then going to competitions all around the world and trying to become the very best at that. And someone who's done that does really, really does not want to be a background piano player. And unfortunately, there's not that many gigs
sure.
for someone to perform on that incredibly advanced level. So a lot of these amazing piano players end up as teachers, or background musicians.
Can you even, I mean, it's sort of strange to, I mean, I guess there are certainly things you can do to prove that you're very good at an instrument, but when you're competing, some of it does seem a little subjective.
Mm-hmm.
So how is it, I feel like trying to be like, I'm number one at piano is a very strange pursuit.
It is.
Like, that's kind of a weird, I don't know what the ultimate payoff is.
I found it even at the much less advanced level I was at. I mean, I was doing some national competing, but I was still 14, so it's a it's a different thing. But once you're like 18 and you're competing, you're in it to win the Tchaikovsky competition or the Van Cliburn. It's really insanely difficult, and the pressure is hard to imagine. You're studying about 8 hours a day and practicing like mad.
What are you studying specifically?
Just your repertoire becomes massive, like encyclopedic, and your technique, it's hard to explain. It's almost like, to me, I felt like it was starting to remove the individuality just a little bit from people. And one of my favorite classical musicians has always been Andre Watts, because he has a lot of interpretation in his music. And I wondered if when he was competing, he was as interpretive, because I noticed that I'd play a Chopin ballade the way I wanted to with all the right notes. But I mean, if I felt like expressing a certain area a little bit more, I would start to get lower marks for that.
Oh, sure.
And I really didn't like that. That wasn't what I was in it for.
Right.
Let me see if I remember how to play this one.
Technically, it was very good, but it was too much fun.
Doing too much fun.
You have too much fun. It was too much fun.
And I think they would have said that, actually. I mean, there's a lot of emphasis on keeping exactly the right rhythm. And you crescendo when it says in the score to crescendo.
But you know what's unfortunate and kind of bullshit about all that is that that's a very mathematical approach to the music, because obviously there are no recordings of when a lot of the classical music was. So you don't know exactly. I mean, you know how they notated it.
Right.
But you don't know exactly. I mean, like, does anyone really know exactly? I mean, it's sort of like Latin, where it's like, well,
we see what the rules are, but we don't know exactly how it was spoken because there's right. no record. There's no audible record of it.
Exactly. And from what we know, it seems like a lot of the people, like Chopin, did perform out at salons and that sort of thing, and he would play his own stuff and other people's stuff. And Liszt certainly did, and Schubert, and many of these composers were also sort of the equivalent of a singer-songwriter in our time. So I think they did interpret their own songs, and there's certainly sections in the pieces that are marked cadenza, and a lot of times they would just create something there, and it wasn't always the same.
Yeah. There's no way that they could have played exactly the same thing, exactly the same mm-hmm. way every single time. And the sheet music of it was probably just one interpretation of, like, okay, well, if I'm going to say this is one interpretation of how to do this. But they must have screwed around with variations, and just because of the nature of the way people are, they would have to be variants here right. and there. So it's sort of bullshit to be like, you don't play it that way.
I completely agree. Completely agree. And then I think you come full circle where the classical solo piano players who do become well known, and there's not that big of a market for that, but the ones who do, they become well known because they put their own spin on it. You can tell who's playing it.
Yeah.
And that's the individuality. So
do you know how to play do you know a bunch of Chopin songs?
I used to.
Do you know the Revolutionary one?
No, I don't think so. Is that one of the preludes?
Yeah, it's the one that's like like there's this constant.
Oh, yeah, I didn't learn how to play it well. I don't think I ever memorized that one.
Let me see if I have it on my, you know, it was always one of my favorite. Because I, you know, when I was younger, I always equated, like, oh, if you could play really fast, that means you're really good. And not realizing, like, no, there's more to technique than just banging the shit out of a piano. Let's see if I have it. It is, oh, yeah, it's this one. Let's see. Whoops, that's a text. That's Mario getting a coin. Let's see. Chopin was getting an email.
Oh, that's amazing.
I always wanted to learn how to play that, but I feel like since I can barely play piano, I'm not going to go from...
That's actually not that hard to play, believe it or not.
Well, it's not to your hands.
No, it's a lot of octaves.
God damn it.
See, it's actually, that's just octaves.
But there's, but when
it's, it's something like that. I don't have the music in front.
God damn it.
It's repetitive, though. You're constantly, what I'm saying. It's one of those things that is very impressive to hear. Like, here's another one. Like, this is very impressive to hear, but it's not that hard. It's a Rachmaninoff. I'm playing the wrong notes. Wait, hang on. I haven't played this in a while. Oh, I've forgotten it. That's how hard it is.
You won. You already won. That's amazing.
But that's actually not. It sounds impressive, but that's like if I played that at a piano competition, they'd be like, "What are you playing that for?"
Yeah, it looks pretty easy. I think I could totally do that. Kyle, could you do that? Yeah, we got that one. I got that one. It's not hard. Whatever. You know, the one that I always wanted to play was the Ballad of Linus and Lucy is a classic. Did you ever get to play that?
I love that one.
It's hard to play in the original key because you need big hands to play it. There's a lot of stretching.
Oh, man, I should know that one. I love that piece. I know I'll just mess it up if I try. It's in one of these keys, isn't it?
I think it starts, if I remember, I think it's...
Yeah, it is.
So what people couldn't see is I was playing the left hand, you were playing the right hand. Yeah,
yeah, that was a cool duet, Chris.
Yeah, we did it.
Yeah.
Yay.
Yeah, so you can't play
I can play piano. Hooray.
Yay.
I have a George Winston version of that that's fucking crazy where he just like in the middle of the song just does this insane breakdown and it goes from being a cool song to like, holy shit.
Oh, I gotta check that out.
Yeah, I'll send it to you. It's real good. But I have a piano at home and I it's one of those things where I'm like, someday I'm going to take a lesson and then I just don't do it.
I'm exactly the same way on the guitar.
And you have to practice.
I know.
It's otherwise, it is one of those things where you just, if you don't do it, you're just not going to be good at it.
And it's harder as an adult. I mean, it's easier because if you really have the drive, you're going to focus on it. But it's so much easier to learn everything as a kid. It just absorbs into your little growing brain cells.
Well, not only that, but you don't have any responsibilities. Like I have to go to work. I can't be like, well, I can't go to work because I have to learn how to play the Peanuts theme. You know, like I got to go to work.
That's
and when
right.
I come home from work, I'm tired.
Yeah, totally.
So, you know, it's just not. I mean, I think even I would imagine you probably have to play mostly every day, I would imagine, right? To keep your fingers nimble and to keep...
The classical stuff and all those various things I've played so far, I haven't played in like a really long time. But what I play every day is my own stuff because I'm constantly... Now I go to Nashville all the time and I'm writing with writers, hopefully for other artists and that sort of thing. I've got a massive song collection and then, of course, I have... My new record, which is produced by Ben Folds.
Yes. He's very good.
Very nice.
his hand, it's fun to watch his hands sail on a piano, too. Like, because he really, like, you're watching your hands, you play very delicately, and watching his hands, he just fucking pounds on the, like, when we had him play that one time, he was like, okay, I can play this, but my fingers really hurt, because I just... played last night really hard and I didn't tape my fingers.
Yeah, he usually has bandages on most of his fingers when he plays.
Because he's playing like percussive piano.
Yeah.
Which adds a whole other, it adds like a weird layer of percussion to it as well. But
he's on a whole other level. I mean, he also has this middle melody going a lot of the time. So he'll play with his left and right thumbs, this whole other thing. So it's almost like he has... the top bit, the bottom bit, bass, and then also this internal melody.
Right.
He's kind of an idiot savant on the keys.
I feel like music, translating to piano, there's definitely a language. And it's very hard for me to, like one of the hard things about learning a language, like when you learn your native language, you just associate the world with those words. Yeah. Then when you learn a second language... your brain does this thing where you go, oh, that is this, which is this. Like there's like a third part to it. And I feel like that's me with music and piano is, oh, I have to say, oh, okay, I have to translate that and then get it into my hands and then translate that. But you, I assume, you just immediately understand it when you see it, right?
More or less. That doesn't mean I can always replicate it, but I can, if someone shows me a part, I can then play it. But when I've watched Ben play, he's one of the only piano players I've really thought, I don't know how he's doing it. Because I know I'm pretty good on the piano, but he's just a whole other level. Most people who are professional singer-songwriters and touring musicians can't play the way that he does.
Do you think it's better to have a bunch of training and then sort of break that mold once you understand it? Or do you think it's better to – because I've seen both. I've seen people who are like, well, I have no formal training, and therefore they weren't bound by rules, and so they invented kind of new stuff because no one told them they couldn't do it that way. So is there one you think that's better than, or I guess it's just preferences?
I don't think one is better. When I first started writing songs, I found that my classical training sometimes got in my way a little bit because I felt like the songs I was writing were all a little bit more neat and orderly than I would have wanted. Mm-hmm. And I don't have any jazz training, and I think that would be really cool and helpful. But I've also written with people who never had any training at all. There's a writer in New York, Jeff Fiorello, who's co-written a few of my songs, and I love writing with him because he'll play something incredible on the guitar, which is his instrument, and he doesn't know what it was. He doesn't know what the chord was. So he can play it again, but he can't tell me what it was, so right. I'll record him, and then I'll figure out on the piano later what that was he did.
Oh, wow.
I love writing like that, because for me, obviously, on the piano, I'm never going to not know what the chord was I just played.
Right.
But Ben never studied classical music, and yet he just wrote a concerto, which, you know, again...
like you do.
But I wonder, had he studied classical music, would it have been quite as fluid? Maybe not knowing all the rules and just having listened to a lot of it and already having taught himself so much in terms of how to play the piano. That might have just helped. It's really interesting. I don't think there is any way around it.
I think it's good. I think with this kind of stuff, it's 'cause especially with music, is basically... it's basically just math and art.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's good to probably understand some rules, but know that rules are not concrete. I think they're guidelines more than they are, because you can become very constrained by, I can't do that because that's not in the, well, why couldn't you just do that? You know, like, why do you have to follow, unless you're competing?
Yeah. It's also really helpful, of course, when you know enough music so that if you hear something, which happens to me sometimes, I'll be in the shower or driving and suddenly an idea will come to me and I'll put it down on my voice notes, or I'll just start singing it out loud, and then I know once I get to the piano how to make those sounds on the piano. I don't have to fumble all around. Although sometimes I don't know what the chords are. I know I haven't hit the right one yet because the melody is already in my head and I can hear it.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's a tricky chord, I don't quite know what that chord is that I've heard until I find it on the piano.
When you're writing, do the bass notes, are they sort of the afterthought? You go melody first and then figure out how to build it out from there, or do you hear both?
It's hard to explain. I know what the chord is, so I guess the bass note is with that, but like the melody is what I can sing, and then it's like it comes in a whole package, and I know I've hit the wrong chord if I'm not playing the right bass note under that.
Mm-hmm.
Which is different than when I'm just sitting at the piano or in a co-writing session and we're coming up with something on the spot.
Yeah.
But the times when the whole song comes or a chunk of the song comes into my head, I know if it's the wrong chord.
Yeah.
There's one that's interesting that, I mean, it has the same bass note in the chorus, but it, in the beginning of the chorus anyway, but the chords are different. But that was one where I knew what the chords were, even though they're kind of odd chords. This is on the new record. It's Isn't it funny? I was so right about you all along. Yeah. Isn't it crazy how much I wanted you to prove me wrong? La da da da. I wanna grind you into the floor, but you're not worth the scuff on my shoe. I wanna make you take a look in the mirror, but hey, enough about you. What about me? This is my voice now. It's been too long letting you say it all. And I don't care how many ways you take down everyone else, 'cause I'm standing tall. Put it away, 'cause I'm
even looking at your hands most of the time. That's not fair.
You know, it's funny. I realized as I was looking at my hands, I needed to not look at them because I'm so used to playing that one at shows. And I suddenly realized if I kept looking at my hands, I was going to mess it up. So
that's kind of funny that your eyes get in the way.
Yeah.
You're like the daredevil of pianos. You don't need those other ways to play other than looking.
There's a Paul Simon cover I do where I also can't really look because it's completely different chords. Man walks down the street, he says, why am I soft in the middle now? Why am I soft in the middle? The rest of my life is so hard. I need a photo opportunity. I want a shot at redemption. Don't want to end up a cartoon in a cartoon graveyard. Bone digger, bone digger. Dogs in the moonlight. Far away from my well-lit door. Mr. Beer belly, get these mutts away from me, you know. Yeah, I don't find this stuff amusing anymore. But if you'll be my bodyguard, I can be your long-lost pal. I can call you Betty, and Betty, when you call me, you can call me Al.
That's like a really dark rendition of that song,
yeah.
Of like a normally upbeat song. It's just like I feel like you could just stare at someone without blinking while singing that at them, just like tears of blood streaming down your face.
Well, exactly, and I thought the lyrics were very dark. I've always thought that, and over the years, I've talked to a few different people about how brilliant that song was, and they're like, "What, the music video with Chevy Chase?" And, because it's true. It's a great arrangement, but it's a real mislead because it's got all that happy percussion on it, and the song, as was the whole album, was written in South Africa during apartheid, and Paul Simon was going through a divorce. And,
that was Graceland, right?
Yeah, Graceland. Yeah. The whole album is incredible, but it's really about a lot of the social issues he was seeing and his own journey and trying to find himself and poverty and people lost. And so these lyrics are, I always thought they were incredibly sad and lonely. And when I was putting together my first EP, I wanted to figure out a way to record that song so that people could hear the lyrics for the first time.
And what do you think they're about, ultimately? What do you think that one specifically is about, besides the sort of sadness of...
I always picture a guy wandering the street. Maybe he's an alcoholic. He's lost his family. He doesn't remember what his purpose is in the world anymore. He's searching for some sort of solace in whoever he can find, like the roly-poly little bat-faced girl. All alone, there were incidents and accidents, there were hints and allegations. That sounds to me like he found some girl and pulled her into an alley, right?
Exactly. It's kind of interesting to counterbalance how creepy that is. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
What a fun... I you know, that's so funny. The music tricked me. I never, ever thought about the lyrics. I'm like, oh, they're just... It's just silly. Yeah, you're right. And then you stick Chevy Chase in the video. Well, you know,
yeah.
Now I feel like 80s Chevy Chase was perfect for that version of the song, but now I feel like current Chevy Chase is perfect for your version of the song.
Shit, that's not a bad idea. I should dig out that... Old, I mean, that song's still out there on iTunes and stuff, but I should make a music video and ask Chevy Chase to be. Can you imagine?
Just so much darker now.
Oh, no.
So much weirder.
Oh, I know.
Yeah. Do you know Chevy Chase?
No, I don't. Oh, not okay. At all. But I've seen some of his comedic work recently.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's, you know, he's a...
Yeah.
He's a guy.
He's a little darker.
He's a little bit.
Yeah.
I think maybe the darkness was always there. It was just, you know, he didn't have the ability to... It didn't have the ability to seep out through things like social media because it was a different time. It was a very different time.
Yeah.
Are you on tour right now?
Well, my record just came out. It came out May 5th, and I have already played some record release shows. I think it's basically going to be a record release year because my other career, the acting career, is sort of all over the place too. So I have to sort of slot shows in a lot of times. If I'm going to be somewhere anyway for work or for social reasons, I'll then book a show. So I don't have a booking agent or a manager. So I've been sort of just figuring out where I'm going to be, what venue I should play. People on social media will help me. You know, if it's a city I don't know, they'll tell me what venue to play and I'll hit them up. And
that's great.
You know, it's been really hands-on and fun. And then I have amazing friends in other places. And I've just booked a show in London that I'm really excited about.
Nice.
And it's at the Borderline, which I think is the most perfect venue. I mean, it's a venue that a singer-songwriter is very lucky to get into. It's a great one. So I'm going to be playing there in June. And I'm about to play Nashville, too.
Nice.
Which is where I don't have a booking agent or a manager, but I do actually have a label for this record, which is amazing. So I'm on Compass Records, and they're distributing it. And so I'm excited to go play a gig in Nashville because that's not only where the record was recorded at Ben Folds Studio, but it's also where the label is. And as of now, as I'm talking to you, I've not met any of the label people face-to-face. I've been talking to them now for months, and they're awesome, but I'm excited to actually see them. I don't know.
Gosh, I'm so – I always get so jealous of musicians because it's the – I mean, you know, comedy is the only way that I have to relate to what it is that you do. But it's – I'm always so jealous because – with comedy, when you release an album, you can't do those jokes anymore. As opposed to like when you write all your songs and put an album, and it's like now you have to go out and play those songs to promote them. So it's I'm so jealous because once you know, it's like if you wrote all your songs and then you're like, well, those are dead. Now I can never play those again. But for you, when people are always like, oh, play that song I love.
Yeah.
But rarely do people go, tell that joke I already heard. Like they don't. It's they don't get the same.
That's a very good point. And it's I mean, it oddly is similar, but it's not because even if I were tired of playing a specific song, if someone's just said, I really want to hear that song you created and it has a meaning to me, then I'm suddenly going to hear it with new ears. You know?
Or you go, fuck you, I do this for me,
fuck
get out.
You. I'm not playing that song.
I'm not
what,
a puppet.
Oh,
you can't
imagine?
Control me.
God, there is no greater honor than when somebody knows any song I've written, let alone when they tell me it's been meaningful to them in some way. Like I've seen videos of kids that heard a song of mine and for some reason that's the song they want to hear over and over again. And it's just incredible. That's just
sweet.
Something I wrote in my living room and it's worked their way into someone's day. And a lot of times I don't even know until I travel to a city I haven't been to before, because I think with the world of social media, we put out all these messages, especially as a musician, you have to, that's how you spread the word about a show. But if you don't get a lot of response from a specific city, sometimes you think, oh, nobody's listening to my music in that city. And then you might play a show there and all of a sudden there's all these people and they just might not be the most communicative on social media, but they saw it and they came and they've been listening to your stuff. Like even Spotify, I mean, that's a great way for people to hear your stuff. And if they're not quite ready to purchase, if they're not going to make that commitment, I don't have a problem with Spotify because I think we've got so many artists these days. There's so many people for the mass public to be familiar with.
Yeah.
It's a little much to ask people to purchase every single thing they listen to.
Yeah.
But a lot of times, even if they didn't purchase it, they're going to come out to your show.
Absolutely.
So that's great.
But it's just basically just like radio. If someone's listening to the radio, they're listening to it for free. They're not buying it.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just a different way for music discovery. I think it'd be really great if there, and maybe there are, but instead of having a playlist, instead of having an algorithmic playlist where it gives you, well, you like this, you probably also like this. I'd love a complete randomizer where it's like, you like this, you'd never fucking ever think to listen to this. And then it's just, you know, just like a weird mix. Because people, I feel like, that's how people listen to music now. Your playlist is a bunch of different stuff. It's not all in one lane anymore.
Oh, yeah. I think that's a great idea. That's a great idea. A complete randomizer. It would be more likely to pull up things that you were into.
Well, it's just getting into the into like legitimate discovery mode. Because you don't know the kind of stuff that you would like if you're just in one lane all the time. And I know, especially as you get older, you're like, I don't have the energy to learn a new thing. But, you know, it'd be nice.
I mean, I have a hip-hop song on my record.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Do you play it on the piano or do you...
I do, but I can't do the rap. I mean, I could try, but tones will.
Oh, that's
that
okay.
But I mean, it's, you know, it's a piano based song that I wrote the music to, and then Tones, who co-wrote the theme song to Justify It, wrote the rap.
Nice.
And so that's actually been a really cool collaboration. I have a song on his record that came out last year, and I'm actually going home after this to finish laying down the vocals in my home studio for a song for his next record that he sent me the whole track, and he just wanted me to write the melody and the hook. So we kind of alternate between that. And then when I wrote my song down, I wrote it specifically for him to rap over the verses. That's one of those songs that came to me in a chunk. Like, I heard it, and I knew what the chords were supposed to be. It was just all...
That's a good day when that happens.
Oh, yeah.
When stuff just comes into your brain fully formed. Oh, that's the best. Mm-hmm. Most of the time I feel like fucking Salieri. Like, what is the next note? Oh, I thank you. Thank you, Lord, for giving me. And then fucking Mozart comes along. It's like, oh, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Fuck you. Fuck you, Mozart. I'm going to Salzburg next week, actually.
Are you?
Yeah, I can just stand out in front of Mozart's house and be like, fuck you, Mozart.
Wow.
Yeah, I probably won't do that, but I am going to go to Salzburg.
I've been there.
You have?
Yeah.
Is it nice?
Yes.
That's good.
It's beautiful.
I'm glad to hear that. I'm very glad to hear that. I think I would love to, in our last little bit of time that we have together, if you want to play one more song of your choosing, and then I would love to have you somehow take a song, whatever it is, some kind of like a Van Halen song or something, and make it hotel piano. Like, you must have a song that you could put the hotel piano filter on. But if you want to play, like, if you want to play something off the new album or something off one of your old albums or just another song that you want to play first, then please go ahead.
Okay, I think I'll play. I wonder which one I'm going to play. I was going to play a love song, but
love songs on the coast.
I don't feel like it. I'm going to play a different one.
Fine, this is your time.
I'm in the mood.
Don't
right now.
So do whatever you want.
I'm going to play this one, which is called Consolation Prize. Every now and then I wonder how you've been in all this time. I wonder if you ever came around to what went down. And once in a while I think of all the life we spent together, and I don't even know your number anymore. Looking back at all your quiet desperation, in retrospect now, aren't you glad I let you go? Isn't it nice to know that you're not my consolation prize? Doesn't it feel like freedom breathing in and out now? Isn't it good to see all the love in someone else's eyes? Doesn't it all make sense how you're better off without me? Whoa. yes, I would have loved to have it back. I only brought it home for you because I loved it. All revisionary history aside, I loved you too. So why am I the bad guy in your estimation? You're not my consolation prize. Doesn't it feel like freedom breathing in and out now? Isn't it good to see all the love in someone else's eyes? Doesn't it all make sense how you're better off without me?
Have you thought of a song to spin for the was it the Beverly Hilton or the Beverly Wilshire?
Beverly Wilshire.
The Beverly Wilshire.
Yeah, the one on Wilshire and Rodeo. It's where Pretty Woman was set.
Yes, that's right.
Oh goodness gracious. The problem is I spend all my time writing my own stuff. So,
so you don't waste your time trying to figure out how to turn like Metallica songs into soft rock? This is shocking to me.
I know. And Metallica stuff like that, I never played there. I'm trying to think what the most aggressive thing would have been that I ever played there that I know how to play. goodness. I don't know, Chris.
What was one of your what was one of your favorite songs to play at the
Oh, I love this one. I mean, an old stuff. There's so many. I mean, what's the first line? Da 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 da. I can't believe I can't remember the first line because it's so pretty. It's called These Foolish Things. Ah. A cigarette that bears a lipstick's traces. An airline ticket to romantic places. And still my heart has wings. remind me of you.
So good.
I love this. There's this, the Michelle Bergman, Michelle Legrand. How's it go? See, it's been so long. I can almost play it.
You don't have to stop playing now. My wife passed away. We're very old. You understand.
Well, this was amazing. Thank you so much for doing a fun Storytellers. And it's so much fun. I get giddy when I see someone wail on the piano. I get so like, I wish I... So good.
Thank you. This has been so much fun.
Thank you for doing it.
Oh,
I wish we could. I wish there was a duet we could go out on.
Well, we can.
But I don't know. I don't know.
We've already played it once today.
Which one? God, I want to play that so bad.
You can.
No, I can just play that left-handed part. Could.
And then you'd start the right hand, and then you'd figure it out. The chords in the middle get a bit tricky on that one.
But yeah,
I think you could if you just
if you play it in C, you can play it. You can play it real simple, but then that's the weenie way to play it. That's not the real way to play it. So I can't.
Yeah, and it's all about distance between the keys. So really, the white keys look easier, and they sort of are. But once you look at the distance, like. It's all the same distances.
I got one song that maybe you might know.
What?
But I don't know. It's pretty.
Okay.
It's a Neil Diamond joint.
What is it? I probably know it. September Morn?
No, it's a duet.
I heard that the other day and it made me cry.
It's a good song.
Full on bawling in the car.
It's a good song. It's
Look at what you've become. Well, you've become a grown-up girl. I still so can sad. Hear you crying in the corner.
Corner of your room.
Mm. What was the one you were going to say?
You don't bring me flowers. You don't sing me love songs.
I'm trying to figure out what key that is. You hardly talk to me anymore when I come through the door at the end of the day. Oh, that was supposed to be your part. I'm sorry. You can sing the bar part.
You sing all my song parts. This is why we're divorcing.
I can barely get a note out edgewise anymore.
You leave your underwear on the...
That's why I take such long showers, honey bear. It's the only place where I can sing in private.
But I pay for the house, and I pay for the car.
Well, you paid for this bullshit, and I can pay for it myself.
Well, then I say have at it. Also, you fucked my best friend.
Well, that's because you don't know how to give it to me, baby.
That's a tough point to argue.
And you don't have much to argue with, let's be honest.
My dick's like a tuna can. It's squat and short at best.
Well, I lied when I said I liked it on our wedding night.
Well, you think I could learn
how to make it more tight.
I know I've taken hot baths every night to try and make it more tight. You don't bring me orgasms.
You
not
don't.
Like you ever did before.
Here's some flowers, just shut up and let me go to sleep.
And now you bring me flowers.
I'm sorry, were you talking?
No, honey, I was masturbating.
Enjoy your burrito, everyone. Fantastic. That's what the song should have been.
That's right. I would listen to that.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
Girls Fight Back is the world-renowned personal safety and empowerment-based self-defense company that teaches women and people of all gender identities how to live confidently while being their own best protector. As a leading voice on violence prevention and empowerment for over 20 years, Girls Fight Back has trained over 1 million people around the world since 2001.
Their engaging workshops create a safe environment for groups to learn evidence-backed, life-saving skills, emphasizing that self-defense education is about more than just physical resistance. Girls Fight Back, led by CEO Nicole Snell, provides audiences with a range of applicable safety strategies that can be used in any setting so that you can lead a badass life.
To learn more about Girls Fight Back and to bring their award-winning trainings and seminars to your community, visit girlsfightback.com. That's girlsfightback.com.